The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
And welcome in, everybody. It is time for another edition of Need to Know. Kip Kiefer is with you on the road. I am visiting out in Las Vegas. My grandson, my son and daughter-in-law have been very gracious hosts. We've had a great time. Started the week down in Dallas and had a really good time there as well. To give you the Kip Kiefer itinerary this week, my son Case, of course, the sports editor for the Las Vegas Sun, was in Dallas covering the Vegas Golden Knights, the defending Stanley Cup champion for the NHL, starting their playoff push for this year against the Dallas Stars, the top rated team in the Western Conference. So we took in those games, and I got to spend some great time with both of my sons at the same time without anybody else around. So that was a rare opportunity for a dad in this day and age where they're as busy as I am. And so everything was great, and also got a chance to spend some quality time with Terry Quillian, my broadcast partner, my media co-host and partner in crime. We had a great time at the game as well. Always fantastic to get to see Terry, especially on her home turf down in Dallas. So a lot going on this week. Came out to Vegas, caught game three, the Vegas team coming up short in overtime. But the series now 2-1 and game four tonight. But we've got business at hand here on Need to Know. Want to thank all the folks in Georgia the last 2 weeks that have been on the show. But up around Lake Lanier, Hall County, we've had a couple of people that started a grassroots voting situation, just a citizen activism group that meets every week and talks about issues and invites candidates to come and share their vision, really getting back to the basics of what America is supposed to be, which is representative government. We've got to get away from this absurd morass that we've fallen into, where it is now the act of not public service by our representatives, but strictly and almost exclusively self-service. The needs of the American people, what's best for the country, those are the things that are supposed to be emphasized, not what's best for somebody's bank account. And that is unfortunately the emphasis now. The big, massive central federal government is the greatest growth enterprise with more cash flow than any business ever conceived. And it's not supposed to be a business. It's not even supposed to be massive. It's supposed to be a federal kind of central organizational situation that is really the country predicated on all the individual states and people sending their representatives to Washington. And basically the role of the federal government was construed to be, amazingly, when I tell you this, a strong defense system, a strong military, and to ensure the sovereignty and security of our country, which basically translates into solid, secure borders. And now the federal government, while it grows to massive, just unbelievable size, creates a deficit of monies. Right now, the debt is about $35 trillion. So they're spending money like drunken sailors for every entitlement program, everything they can think of to try and curry favor with constituents and individuals who they think are important to their chances of being reelected. Because when you're riding the gravy train, folks, the obsession with being reelected is everything. They start running for re-election the first day of a new term because it's the greatest job in the history of the world. If you're a congressional representative, a senator, a bureaucrat in any of the departments or agencies or bureaus in Washington, or even the hundreds of thousands of contractors, it's not enough that we've got this gargantuan payroll of all of these lifelong government workers, but they job out so much of it too to the individual contractors. The whole thing is completely out of control. Government is a massive waste of money. And again, the people that are in it are filling their pockets from any number of sources. And that's not even to suggest that it's totally illegal or corrupt, but they have a lot of funding coming from a lot of different directions and really are not expected to pay for anything themselves. So it's the greatest gig in the world. And that is the obsession now, the self-service that these people are treating themselves to. And it's supposed to be public service for you and me and all the people that are officially in our Constitution, the government of our country. I want to talk to you today about something that many of you may not be aware of. I know younger people listening to the show probably are not aware of it because, sadly, American government and civics and American history are totally de-emphasized in today's educational experience. If there is any kind of historic teachings, they focus more on what's wrong with America, what America did that was so sinister and evil, what America is ill-conceived and was really an experiment that should never have been tried. You know, the whole narrative has changed. And I really feel bad for younger people now, for children in elementary school, for kids coming up through high school. And look at our even elite colleges that have no clue. They're out there parading around and chanting and yelling and screaming at the top of their lungs in some kind of righteous indignation in their minds of the evils of America and our allies and really have adopted this Marxist approach that basically tries to boil down everything into the simplest of terms, where there is an oppressor and there is an oppressed. And no matter what the circumstances are, no matter what the history that leads to these conclusions of where we are in the modern day, and there are so many things intertwined in all of this discussion. Of course, right now, the hot topic is Israel and the Palestinians. These people, these college kids who have been basically brainwashed and indoctrinated throughout their entire educational experience to believe that capitalism and law and order and different things that all that in my era coming up were taught were the actual foundations and the pillars of what our society depends on is being taught now that these are evil things, that these are oppressive things. And once again, to limit it to the simplest of terms, they are teaching these kids, these young people, that there's an oppressor and an oppressed. And in this narrative right now in the Middle East, they are adamant. And you can see from the passion from the protesters who really have not learned anything about the history of the region or what's actually going on there. We've touched on that on some other shows, that modern day Israel has been a melting pot for centuries. That part of that piece of land in the Middle East was not the state or the country of Palestine. It was a place that where all faiths lived and occupied and interacted. Of course, there's always been conflicts, but there's been a large population in modern day Israel of Christians and Jews and Muslims for hundreds of years, and it has changed hands every major power in the history of civilization at one time or another has, quote, occupied, unquote, that territory. And now you hear these young people that Israel has occupied the Palestinian territory. It's just not true. It's just not true at all. The state of Israel was created after World War II because of the horrendous Holocaust during the war, which resulted in about 6 million Jews being eliminated from the face of the earth. These people out there chanting about genocide, that is the ultimate genocide in the history, the annals of human history. It's amazing how all of a sudden the most oppressed people, going all the way back to the Egyptian days, where the Hebrew slaves basically built the Egyptian Empire. This is the most oppressed group of people in the history of civilization and Earth. And now, all of a sudden, they are cast. They're being called. This is the ultimate. After the Nazis basically eliminated so many European Jews, just basically declared war on the Jewish faith. Now that they are being compared to Nazis is the ultimate irony. Anyway, I wasn't going to talk a lot about that subject today because I wanted to preface what I was talking about with my sadness that we are not emphasizing American history anymore. And I think a major event took place just a week ago on, I think it was Wednesday, on the 25th of April. The Supreme Court gathered for their last session of this current season. They come back in October to hear more cases. But the last case was a doozy because it was responsive to the suit filed by President Trump and his team that a president cannot be denied the principle of immunity and effectively be able to serve his office. And that is what is happening right now. The trial that was supposed to be already underway in Washington has been delayed while the Supreme Court, and I'll say grudgingly, took this case because the Supreme Court in this day and age is not very comfortable being cast in the ultimate political limelight. That's why a lot of people say, well, if there was election fraud in 2020, the Supreme Court, all the courts didn't make any moves to address it, wouldn't take any of the cases. Well, that's not because that they don't think that there was any kind of inconsistencies. I really don't know what they think. But it comes down to the reluctance to take cases involving elections and political situations. Puts the court in a very uncomfortable position because what I'm about to tell you is something most Americans need to be aware of. And that fact is that our Constitution, as brilliant a document as it is, and all of the amazing things that it represents, the achievement of people of that era, to put that together and create the backbone for a country, is a document that is not perfect, and it's not perfect for a lot of reasons, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that today. The Supreme Court has been charged now with trying to interpret what the founding fathers were trying to say and what they did not say. And the whole story on that is basically a lot of Americans may not realize that, yes, the Americans broke away from Great Britain in 1776 with the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And there are people who believe that's the document that really formed the country. All that document did was say to England, we've had enough, we're out of here, and here are all the things that we aspire to create. But the Declaration of Independence did not get into defining what the country's structure was going to be, what procedurally we were going to have, what kind of government we were going to have. It just talked about more the vision of what they wanted to create. So the war with Great Britain, the American Revolution, began a couple of years later, because you have to remember, this wasn't guys jumping on a transport plane and flying across the Atlantic. These guys had to come by boat. The invading British soldiers, once war was declared by the Americans, didn't arrive for, you know, months or even a year after the Declaration of Independence was issued. So the war actually raged at the end of the 1770s and into the 1780s. And the Revolutionary War did not end until September of 1783. So the war from the Declaration of Independence to its conclusion actually lingered for 7 years, but there was not continuous action because the times, transport was not anything close to very expedient. So with all that being said, 1783 is when England formally surrendered and the Americans went about the task of trying to put together a system, a government, I mean, starting from square one. And there was an extraordinary group that really, a new book, I can't remember the gentleman's first, might be Roger, his last name is Ellis for sure, has written a brilliant book called The Quartet. And The Quartet talks about that formation over the next few years of trying to get 13 individual colonies, all with different backgrounds, all with different approaches, all with different beliefs in what the government system should be. And this was a time when, rightfully, the real emphasis was put on state rights, because that's what the conception of the country was. That's why it's the United States of America, not the American states. So this quartet, and it was made up of names that I know you've heard of, and maybe one that most of you, the overwhelming majority of you, probably never have really noted. But the four guys in the quartet that really got things going in our country were James Madison, who would be a future president, of course, from Virginia, Alexander Hamilton, which, yes, he is has a Broadway play named after him, a musical that is very prominent. But Alexander Hamilton, the founding father, was a very intriguing figure and very important in the formation of our country. The third one, I know you know this name, of course, because it was our first president. It was the general in the Revolutionary War in charge of all the American forces. It is the guy that you look at on your $1 bill, George Washington. Now, George Washington, of the four guys in the quartet, was not very inclined to participate. A lot of people were trying to draft him to become the king of America. There were people that were still so set in European ways and the British ways that they said, okay, George needs to be king. Washington did not want to serve in a political situation. Washington wanted to go home. That was a long, grueling war. You talk about daunting challenges. What Washington and his ragged Continental Army did to defeat the most powerful force in the world, the British Army, was nothing short of just absolutely astounding. So Washington just wanted to go home to his farm in Northern Virginia, which is now Arlington, which is a thriving D.C. suburb as the greatest growth industry in the world continues to build gated communities and high-rise luxury apartment buildings. Washington wanted to go to the land that's now Mount Vernon and enjoy his retirement. After all, at this time, Washington, at the end of the Revolution, he was born in 1732. So at the end of the Revolution, he was right about 50 years old, and he was ready to call it quits. He didn't want any part of being involved. But the 13 colonies, once again, with all kinds of different interests and all kinds of different agendas, they had one huge thing in common: tremendous admiration and gratitude and even awe and complete support for George Washington. So for Madison and Hamilton to be effective, they had to have George Washington on that team, because he was the glue that held a lot of these very fractious, very delicate, different relationships together. Because if you could bring Washington to the meeting, it really kind of was a uniter for all these people with all kinds of different visions and agendas. And there was, again, to emphasize that, so many states, so many people involved, and a lot of them had different ideas about what this country should be. Now, the fourth one is the guy I don't think most of you probably have ever heard of. And why history doesn't remember this guy is kind of amazing to me, because John Jay, just like it sounds, J-O-H-N-J-A-Y, John Jay from New York, was the fourth member of the quartet. And John Jay was already, without a legal system here, was already brilliantly versed in theories of what laws should be, on what the structure of the rights of American citizens should be. John Jay was a superstar on that team, and he would go on, when the country was finally founded on the basis of three branches of government: executive, judicial, legislative. John Jay became basically the first Chief Justice of what was not then a Supreme Court, but he was the leading legal scholar in the country when the country got up and running. Now, all this started in 1783 at the end of the Revolution, and it culminated in 1787 with the adoption of the U.S. Constitution. And again, the Constitution, as if you go back and read the preamble and all of the information there, this was a huge job of assembling it. Thomas Jefferson was also not officially in the in this book a member of the quartet, but he was certainly a strong supporting cast member, because he was so eloquent in his ability to transcribe and write all of the things that were what they were being created, that he was very much important in the process as well. So you had Madison, Hamilton, Jefferson, Jay, and Washington. So a quintet might be a better description. Also, a couple other guys who were very prominent that are mentioned in the quartet, and they are both named Morris. Robert Morris, who was from Pennsylvania, a college named after him. College is named after all these guys. And also Governor. What a great name for a guy. This guy wasn't the governor, but his name was Governor. Governor Morris was another really important, significant character. But the four I mentioned are the primary drivers, architects of getting all the states on board. And the problem, you know, now, and I started telling you about last Wednesday, April 25th, there on this question of presidential immunity, there are so many reasons why the Constitution did not take the steps to spell out the specific duties of the president and all of the different legal rights and things they had. There's a lot in the Constitution about a president's rights, and clear evidence that the founders wanted the president to be the ultimate authority and be in charge. But they stopped short of really defining specifics for a couple of reasons. Number one is because they wanted things to evolve in this country, because this is something that really had never been created like this before. So they wanted to see future leaders have the opportunity to kind of fill in some of the things that they did not directly address. If you read the Constitution carefully under the duties of the president, there's a lot implied there, but not necessarily spelled out. The other reason for that was because that was such a sensitive issue of people breaking away from the crown in England and wanting to form a free society based on states and states' rights and not have a central power broker that was going to be able to dictate and mandate everything in American life. They purposely left that kind of vague and ambiguous. And also, they had to do it that way because they would not have been able to get everybody on the same page and agree. This was probably the most volatile issue that they had to address, was the broad powers of the president. And they had to keep it a little bit vague in terms of language just to get the American machine up and running. And it's causing problems now because, again, with interpretive requirements in the Constitution and less people really being versed in it or trying to figure out what the implied meaning of a lot of the language is, has proven very difficult now. And because this has come up, the great fear of the founding fathers that the president could be subjected to legal challenges and political chicanery, like we're seeing in the Trump situation, and we can spend a whole show talking about these ridiculous cases being brought against him. But on specifically the charge in Washington that Trump tried to overturn the election in 2020 and is some kind of seditionist or conspirator to usurp the American process. Trump says that as president, he had every right to say, I see election irregularities and it needs to be looked into and it needs to be addressed. And of course, now, they are saying that the fact that he was president at the time doesn't mean anything because he was only looking out for his self-interest. And so, therefore, presidential immunity, which is a principle in the Constitution, and it has to be because a president would not be able to make any decision if it could be challenged legally when he's a private citizen and he could be liable for his actions. It would completely neuter and tie the hands of anyone to be president, like Trump so eloquently says, it would just make that position a ceremonial situation with no real authority or power. And you can't have that emanate in the way that things were conceived. The executive branch had broad powers to run the show, only to be checked by the legislators that are elected by the people in their individual states, and the judicial system, which would not be politicized, which would always rule on constitutional grounds, not on legalisms, like Kamala Harris says. She says that Neil Gorsuch was not a good judge selection because he rules on legalisms, not what's best for people. Well, the court is not supposed to do what's best for people. The court is supposed to rule on law and constitutional principles. So this case in the Supreme Court is going to be fascinating. We heard the testimony last Wednesday. They will come back with a decision in the coming weeks or months. And this basically is going to be one of the first times that the court has ever been called upon and has accepted the challenge of kind of defining what the founders felt like they needed to leave out because they couldn't foresee the future and the evolution of the country. But more importantly, just to create a country, they had to leave that language vague and ambiguous just so everybody could sign on and be on board, and we could create this country that's still steaming along here almost 250 years later. So the quartet, that's people to think about today: Washington, Madison, Hamilton, John Jay. Those were the guys. That was the sales force that was out pushing the deal for American government and constitutional law. And those guys should be on top of your thoughts as you watch events unfold today. That's Need to Know for this week. I'm Kip Kiefer. Hope you learned something here, or maybe a thought was presented that you had not considered. That's what we're here for each week. We are living in extraordinary times with a lot happening. I am really looking forward to seeing how the Supreme Court interprets this suit, because a president has to have the ability to run the country without fear of civil liability as an individual or criminal liability in this case, since they have cooked up charges strictly political against a former president, and we are witnessing all of this unfolding before us. I'm Kip Kiefer here on TKR. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget Kiefer and Curry this week. We'll have another rousing program and the starting lineup on Saturday morning, Birmingham 3340 television. Always great guests, always great conversation. The starting lineup, can't miss TV each and every Saturday. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.